Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. We have a huge docket today, and I mean huge, a lot of stuff on the docket. So let's take a look. Another anniversary comes for the Vallo Daybell matters. Letitia Stauch has a status conference today. A crime that strikes at the very heart of the justice system. Not good at all. Things aren't looking good for R. Kelly, for sure. Johnny Depp's attorneys speak out. Trial didn't go so well for Todd and Julie Chrisley. Stalking is wrong, even if you're a police officer. One of the most dangerous crimes you could possibly commit is that of arson. We'll talk about that. I need more information to understand how they come to this settlement. And another case of I can't swim, and then finally our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. All right, aficionados, you know the drill. Subscribe if you have not. Like the video if you do. Leave me a comment below about what we discuss here today. Make sure you hit that little bell so you receive notifications. And remember, you can always listen to us on your favorite podcasting app anytime by searching Crime Talk with Scott Reich. And remember, you can listen to us anytime on your favorite podcasting app by searching Crime Talk with Scott Reich. Today is Thursday, June 9th, 2022. Let's go ahead and open the docket. Well, today's June 9th, another anniversary in the Chad Daybell, Lori Vallo matter. What anniversary is that that you are speaking of, Scott? Well, it was on June 9th of 2020 that police discovered the remains of the two siblings in the backyard of Chad Daybell. As you may recall, for months, investigators searched for J.J. Vallo and Tylee Ryan, who once lived in Arizona, and prosecutors say their mother, Lori Vallo, and her brother, Alex Cox, and Chad Daybell conspired to kill them. One could certainly conclude that they were involved, given the fact that they were found at various spots located on Chad Daybell's property. And there's that notorious phone call where Lori Vallo calls Chad Daybell literally about the same time the police are getting real warm to finding the remains of JJ and Tylee, and then Chad drives off down the street. I think that's one of the most damning pieces of evidence, and doesn't look good. But 2 years, ladies and gentlemen, 2 years, and we finally have a trial date set in January of 2023. And yet the prosecution still acts like they're not ready to go. All right, Letitia Stauch, another case that continues to go on and on. As for those of you who don't recall, Letitia Stauch is accused of first-degree murder in regards to the death of her stepson, Gannon Stauch, years ago. And there's a status conference because, yet again, there were some issues regarding whether she was going to be allowed to present a mental deficiency defense. Originally, that was not pled, but then the defense said, well, we want to present some evidence about that, which triggered basically an NGRI evaluation. So it seems to be today is going to be another status conference as it relates to that. We'll find out at 1:30. We'll be watching, and we will let you know what takes place. But that case drags on and on. And the thing that surprised me a little bit is Letitia Stauch doesn't want to come to any court appearances because it stresses her out, given her fragile mental state. Well, that's one of the things that happens when you go to court, is you have to go to court. You can't really conduct the proceedings unless the defendant is there. And if someone has mental health issues, I'm not sure, particularly when they've raised competency, that they can competently waive such appearances. So once again, another case that just seems to be having air created left and right. All right, now I want to talk about this because these alleged crimes go to the very heart of the justice system, okay? And this is wrong. Don't get me wrong. I have had lots of judges issue rulings that I didn't like, but there's a remedy for that. You go back to court, you maybe ask for reconsideration, you appeal to a higher court. But you don't do what this guy allegedly did. So this guy, Nicholas John Roski, okay? He has a gun and a knife, and he was detained by police near the Maryland home of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh after making threats. Now, this Roski guy is from Simi Valley, California, and he's been charged with attempted murder of a Supreme Court justice. Now, I haven't looked that one up just yet on the federal sentencing guidelines, but that's going to carry a lengthy prison sentence, as well it should. Now, Mr. Roski was apparently upset by the leaked draft of the opinion by the Supreme Court, signaling that it was in a position to overturn the case going back to the early 70s of Roe v. Wade. According to the affidavit, Mr. Roski stated that he began thinking about how to give his life a purpose and decided that he would kill the Supreme Court justice. Like a suicide bomber almost, really? Well, Mr. Roski appeared in the United States District Court yesterday before a magistrate judge by the name of Timothy J. Sullivan, and he was represented by the federal public defender. When asked if he understood the proceedings, he says, "I think I have a reasonable enough understanding, but I wouldn't say I'm thinking clearly." Roski said he was on medications and that he didn't take his medications that day. He later clarified that he had a clear enough understanding to proceed. He consented in court to being detained before his trial and temporarily waived his right to a bond hearing. Now, federal investigators allege that Mr. Roski traveled to Montgomery County from California with a mission. He wanted to kill the Supreme Court justice, one he thought would join the opinion that would ease restrictions on guns, according to the affidavit. He found the target's address, according to the affidavit, online, because people have been putting a Supreme Court justice's address online, and he arrived in front of the justice's home about 1 a.m. on Wednesday. Now, two United States deputy marshals spotted Roski exiting a cab in front of the home. He wore black clothing and carried a suitcase and a backpack with weapons and other supplies, including a Glock 17 and magazines and ammunition, a tactical knife, a hammer, a screwdriver, a crowbar, zip ties, and duct tape. Now, shortly after he arrived at the home, the Montgomery County Emergency Communications Center received a call from Roski saying that he had suicidal thoughts and came to kill a specific Supreme Court justice. Kavanaugh and his family were at home at the time, and the Montgomery County Police Chief Marcus Jones said the county officers got to the scene 7 minutes after being dispatched. The suspect complied with the officers' directions and was arrested without incidents. Now, threats on federal judges have seen a dramatic increase in the last few decades. There's been 5 federal judges that have been slain in the past 45 years. 2 years ago, the 20-year-old son of a federal judge in New Jersey was shot and killed at the front door of the family's home, and the man who fatally shot Judge Esther Salas' son and wounded her husband had tracked down Salas' address, church, and other personal information online. In response to that, the Senate Judiciary Committee approved legislation in December that would scrub personal information about judges from the internet and enhance their home security systems. A similar bill is pending in the House, and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell in the Senate urged the House to pass the separate legislation to enhance security for Supreme Court justices and their family. The bill passed the Senate just days after the publication of the leaked draft opinion to overturn Roe. Now, McConnell said the threat at Kavanaugh's home is exactly the kind of event that many feared the terrible breaches of the court's rules and norms could fuel. House Majority Whip Steny Hoyer said he had very positive discussions about this bill with the Senate and is hopeful that they can get an agreement soon. Now, in recent weeks, there's been many demonstrations outside the home of conservative justices. Protesters insist they are exercising their First Amendment right, and they emphasize that their demonstrations are people and reject any notion that they are trying to influence the judge. Okay, well, this knucklehead who shows up at the Supreme Court justice's house at 1 a.m. had nothing but bad intentions, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm sure this guy's got mental health issues like a bunch of these nut jobs do. Okay, and he's upset at Roe v. Wade and more guns, but yet he shows up with his own armory. This guy is not a mental giant when it comes to his rational thought, for sure. And it shows the kind of people that sometimes you're dealing with in the world. And yes, people have a First Amendment right to protest, but in front of a justice's home or even a district court judge's home, I think, and I'm a huge advocate of the First Amendment, I think that that's just a little inappropriate. If you want to protest at the Supreme Court and say, we don't like the opinions that are going to come down, then go protest there. But when you go to someone's home, I'm telling you, that is saying, I am there to intimidate and threaten and coerce you because we don't like your opinions. Now, understand, I've represented cases where individuals have threatened United States attorneys. They have threatened United States District Court judges. And guess what? It's just always wrong. I get it. Sometimes people want to vent, but that's it. But when you start showing up and you start making true threats, which are not protected under the First Amendment, you're going a little too far. Everybody needs to check themselves and say, how can we, you know, in a world that has so little respect for everyone these days and everyone else's opinions, you know, think about it. Just a little common courtesy every now and then can go a long way. Like many Americans, we got a dog during the pandemic. My quarantine dog, Miss Winnie the Bulldog. Now, Miss Winnie has grown accustomed to being around us all the time. When we were leaving the house, Winnie would have extreme anxiety, so we decided to look for natural products to help with her anxiety. We looked for the highest quality CBD treats, and we were not satisfied, and neither was Winnie. So we created a high-quality CBD product that absorbs faster and provides the required results faster. Baked in Colorado, CBD treats and beverage enhancers are made with nanotechnology. The nanotechnology makes the CBD extraction more pure, also allows for Baked in Colorado products to work faster. Baked in Colorado products can help reduce your pet's anxiety, ease joint pain, and help with your dog's skin problems. Go to our online store and see what Baked in Colorado product is best for your dog. When you order at bakedincolorado.com, enter code Winnie and receive 15% off your first order. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If your dog does not experience the desired results in 30 days, return the product and we will refund your money. No questions asked. You know who things aren't looking so good for, other than that last guy we just talked about? That's right, R. Kelly. Well, the prosecutors have filed their sentencing memorandum with the court, and they believe that R. Kelly should be sentenced to at least 25 years in prison when he appears before the judge this week for sentencing. Now, as you may recall, Kelly was convicted in September of 2021 of all 9 counts of racketeering, child exploitation, and sex trafficking. The case was based around accusations made by 6 women, and 45 people in total testified against him for the prosecution. The government respectfully submits in their sentencing memorandum that 25 years is warranted. They added that he should be fined between $50,000 and $250,000, but I understand Mr. Kelly is just about broke. And Kelly's lawyer, Jennifer Bojean, who successfully represented Bill Cosby when he had his conviction overturned, argued in her May 27th motion to the court that the appropriate sentence was between 14 to 17 and a half years. Now, prosecutors said that the significantly larger sentence, based on the seriousness of the offense, and in their memo, the prosecutors wrote, he lured young girls and boys into his orbit, often through empty or conditioned promise of assistance in developing a career in the entertainment industry, or simply by playing into the minor's understandable desire to meet and spend time with a popular celebrity. Prosecutors added that Kelly continued his crimes and avoided any punishment for almost 30 years, and he now must be held accountable. Kelly is currently being held in the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn, and on August 1st, he is also due to go to trial in Chicago on charges of inappropriate images with minors and witness tampering. He'll be tried alongside 2 other co-defendants, Daryl McDavid and Milton June Brown, accused and paying witnesses in Mr. Kelly's 2008 trial. Kelly is also facing 4 separate charges alleging sexual abuse in state court in Chicago and a child prostitution charge in Minnesota. Next on the docket, Johnny Depp's attorneys speak out. So Depp's attorneys, Camille Vasquez and Ben Chu, appeared on multiple shows to slam Amber Heard's claims that the defamation trial was unfair. The attorney said how happy Johnny was to have won and that he hasn't smiled like this in 6 years. They also slammed Heard's claims that she lost the trial because he is more powerful and more popular than she is. Now, Chu and Vasquez also said that is utterly false and that social media played a part, adding that the jury simply didn't like her because she didn't take accountability for anything. The pair then suggested that Depp might even waive the $8 million judgment against Heard that she was ordered to pay Mr. Depp. Heard's attorneys previously said she can't afford it and that they plan to appeal the decision. Depp's attorneys stated that this was never about the money for Mr. Depp. This was about restoring his reputation, and he's done that. We have to be careful what we say, but this was about Mr. Depp's reputation, but that was what it was about for him, according to the attorneys. Now, Mr. Chu said in the interview, "My sense is that it had a lot to do with accountability. Johnny owned his issues. He was very candid about his alcohol and drug issues. He was candid about some unfortunate texts that he wrote. And I think it was a sharp contrast to Ms. Heard, who didn't seem, or at least the jury may have perceived, that she didn't take accountability for anything." They both agreed that Heard had an answer for everything, but wasn't taking accountability for anything. Vasquez added, "The key to victory was focusing on the facts and the evidence and Johnny's opportunity to speak the truth for the first time. He was able to connect with the jury and the general public and tell what really happened. I didn't think Johnny Depp was a great witness, but I think Amber Heard was a terrible witness as well. And yes, they are right. She did not accept anything. She had an excuse for everything." And think about it. When somebody has an excuse for everything, do you ever believe them? No. Well, guess who thinks they had an excuse for everything? Todd and Julie Chrisley. The reality TV stars have been found guilty of running a year-long fraud conspiracy and hiding their money from the Internal Revenue Service. A federal jury in Atlanta convicted the couple on Tuesday, who now could face up to 30 years in prison. Now, Todd Chrisley was found guilty of conspiracy to commit bank fraud conspiracy to defraud the United States, and tax fraud. Julie Chrisley found guilty of conspiracy to commit bank fraud, conspiracy to defraud the United States, tax fraud, wire fraud. The two have been married for 26 years and share 5 children together. The family is best known for their reality show, Chrisley Knows Best, which started in 2014 and is currently still on the air. Chrisley's former CPA, Peter Tarantino, was also convicted Tuesday, and he was found guilty of conspiracy to defraud the United States and willfully filing false tax returns. The Chrisleys were initially indicted back in August of 2019, and a new indictment was filed in February of this year. Their trial began about 3 weeks ago, and prosecutors alleged that the Chrisleys submitted fake documents to banks when applying for bank loans. They also alleged that Julie Chrisley submitted a false credit report and fake bank statements when trying to rent a house in California, and then the couple refused to pay rent a few months after they started actually using the home. The couple apparently used a film production company they controlled to hide income to keep the IRS from collecting unpaid taxes owed by Todd Chrisley. Now, during the trial, it was revealed that Todd Chrisley had a gay affair with his business partner who helped him commit the fraud before tipping off the cops after their romance soured. Mark Braddock, who had to tell his own wife about the affair before testifying, turned the Chrisleys into the FBI for tax fraud and told the jury he did not want to be talking about his affair. Braddock has also been granted immunity since he got to the authorities first. After the affair ended, Braddock claims an anonymous source sent text messages threatening to expose the relationship and his boss's fraud. Todd Chrisley and Braddock ended up paying the blackmailer $38,000, which Braddock withdrew from the bank in 4 $9,500 payments before meeting Todd Chrisley in a parking lot. He handed over a large amount of cash in a little bag for Todd Chrisley to pay the blackmailer, and he testified during the trial. Chrisley's lawyer, Bruce Morris, accused Braddock of thinking he was Todd Chrisley and had an obsession with the guy. Braddock has denied these claims. He also said the only time he'd been with a man was with Todd Chrisley. Well, after they were found guilty, United States District Court Judge Eleanor Ross allowed the Chrisleys to remain free on bond. The judge placed them on a GPS monitoring and home detention, meaning they can only leave the house for certain reasons, including work, medical appointments, and court appearances. Just goes to show you, first one in gets the best deal. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right. Little practice pointer for everybody out there. Stalking is bad. And it's a crime. Miami-Dade police officer Javier Magarin's girlfriend dumped him on March 20th, and at the conclusion of the heated argument and repeated irreconcilable differences, according to an arrest affidavit, and he almost immediately began calling, texting, emailing, and messaging on social media apps. Magarin hid an Apple AirTag in his girlfriend's trunk on the day he moved out, which would allow him to track her location. He showed up at the friend's house, where his ex was hanging out, and was confronted about the AirTag. He claimed he removed it, but a day later texted her a picture of her car saying that he had lied. His ex-girlfriend threatened to tell his employer about the tracking device, to which Magarin said he did not care because his life was already over. Magarin continued stalking and harassing her, sending her a picture of a Glock with the caption, "I'll do it in style for you," when she threatened to file a restraining order. A month after the breakup, the cops were able to locate the AirTag attached underneath to her car, and the Miami-Dade police said it is discouraging to learn that one of their officers was involved in an off-duty domestic violence incident, which led to the arrest. Magarin was released on a $6,000 bond, according to records. So, ladies and gentlemen, when somebody says stop texting me, that means stop. It means don't pass go. Don't do it again. If you do it again, guess what? It's harassment. Do it a couple more times, you're probably at stalking. Just don't do it. Next, one of the most dangerous things that somebody can actually do. Yes, it's called the crime of arson. An activist was caught on video surveillance trying to set a Wyoming abortion clinic on fire. And the Casper police posted the video online offering a $5,000 reward for tips on the identity of the would-be arsonist. The woman is shown wearing a hoodie and a mask, carrying a red fuel can through the lobby of the clinic. Now, according to the police, she's about 5'7" tall, medium build, and appears to have been acting alone. In the early morning, firefighters arrived to the clinic to find a broken window and a smoke coming out of the corner of the building. Investigators have said they found several areas of the building where the accelerant, the gas, was used. The clinic was set up in mid-June as the only facility of its kind in the state, and the fire damaged a building that was being renovated and has delayed the clinic's opening by about 6 months. See, arson, ladies and gentlemen, comes into one of the laws where you could be found guilty of felony murder. If somebody dies in the commission of that offense, guess what? It's felony murder. You go to prison for the rest of your life. You start a fire, the whole town burns down, it catches fire, the flames go everywhere. I'm telling you, people just don't think about it when it comes to arson. It's one of the most dangerous crimes someone can possibly do. It's up there with simply shooting firearms down a crowded street. That's how dangerous it is. Now, I'm going to need a little more information on this. A woman was awarded a $5.2 million settlement against her ex-boyfriend's car insurance company after she claimed she got a sexually transmitted disease from him after they had sex in his 2014 Hyundai Genesis. Now, court papers reveal that the woman notified Geico in February 2021, stating that she and the insured party had been in a romantic relationship since 2017. The woman told the insurance company her intentions to seek monetary damages, alleging she contracted HPV, the human papillomavirus, from him in his car. The woman alleged that her ex-boyfriend had been told he had throat cancer tumor and was diagnosed with HPV, yet he continued to have unprotected sex with her, knowing the risks. In May of 2021, the arbiter found that the man and the woman had sex inside his vehicle that directly caused or indirectly contributed to cause the HPV infection. The ex-boyfriend was found liable for not disclosing his infection status, and the woman was awarded $5.2 million for damages, and the injuries had to be paid by Geico. Geico filed motions seeking a new hearing of the evidence and to have the award tossed out, saying the judgment violated the company's right to due process and the arbitration agreement was unenforceable. Now, court documents revealed that the three-judge panel found that the lower court did not make a mistake by denying the company's motion. The court said Geico did not have a right to relitigate those issues once damages had been determined and a judgment was entered. There's something about this case that just doesn't seem right to me. $5.2 million, I understand people get it, but to say that the car insurance was responsible for it? Heck, what if they got pregnant in the car? Is the car insurance going to be responsible for taking care of the child as well? Because really the $5.2 million is for damages in the future, right? So that one doesn't make sense to me. I got to get the full opinion on that one, but let me know what you think. And then we have another case of I can't swim. A sergeant from the Volusia Sheriff's Office assisted the Ormond Beach Police Department after they got a call about someone stealing a jet ski in the Halifax River, which is part of the Atlantic Intercoastal Waterway on Florida's East Coast. Police say 48-year-old Ronald Williams tried to steal the jet ski but was unable to start it and ended up floating out into the middle of the waterway. Police asked a nearby family to borrow their boat and drove out to the stranded thief. Williams quickly revealed to the officers that he can't swim, and the officers offered him a rope. They asked multiple times if he had any weapons, all while Williams was stumbling awkwardly on the jet ski, looking afraid of the water. The body cam footage cuts out until the officers eventually retrieve the jet ski and tie it to the boat. They bring the boat back to the family at the dock, thanking them for the help. Now, according to the Volusia Sheriff's Office, Williams was taken into custody without incident, and the jet ski was returned to its rightful owner. That's right. You can steal a jet ski, but you can't swim. Brilliant. A possible contestant for our next feature here. That's right, the dumb criminal of the day. A veteran was receiving disability checks from the government after claiming he had suffered PTSD and that he couldn't lift more than 10 pounds. Zachary Barton, 36, of Port St. Lucia, Florida, received over $245,000 in disability payments from the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs. But it appears he has been exaggerating his mental and physical impairments to increase the amount of disability payments that he receives. Barton was busted after posting pictures of himself on social media that showed him performing strenuous weightlifting, including leg pressing 650 pounds and chest pressing over 300 pounds. These were pictures of him competing in a bodybuilding contest. Stars and Stripes states that Barton pled guilty to theft of government funds from a federal agency. Rule number one, if you're going to break a law, don't live stream the crime scene. Don't take photos, ladies and gentlemen. Otherwise, you end up on the dumb criminal contestant of the day. All right, it was a big docket. We missed yesterday. I apologize. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.